it is so costly to switch vendors after you've gone through the vetting, after you've gone through the relationship building, and that will affect your bottom line, whether that has to do with quality, whether that has to do with price negotiations. Starting a great relationship and maintaining that is far more lucrative.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Do you care for your vendor relationships? Well, your vendor relationships are as important as your customer relationships. If you're dealing with international vendors such as China, Mexico, or India, your relationship with vendors and understanding of their culture could impact your bottom line and growth. In today's episode, we have our guest, Francois Jeffrey from Novilend, who discusses what manufacturers need to know about working with international suppliers. He also shares his insights into why the transactional approach does not work while collaborating with international suppliers. Finally, he shared what other options companies might have to access international supplier markets without having pre-existing relationships in these countries. Let me introduce Francois to you. Francois is the Director of Business Development at Novilend, a supply chain management company disrupting the traditional international supply chain through technology and customer-centric innovations. With a degree in industrial engineering from West Virginia University, he has helped develop streamlined processes for international sourcing and logistics management by listening to what businesses and importers need and implementing them into the core of Novilend services. Having worked with thousands of companies in discussing and streamlining their supply chain, Francois is an entrepreneur at heart and has a passion for speaking with every single Amazon FBA seller that joins the Novilend community. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hey, Francois, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam, thank you for having me.
Of course, just to kick things off, do you want to start with your personal story and your current focus?
Yeah, just a little bit on my background. So I have an industrial engineering background, so a lot of it has to do with supply chain. And I sort of just stumbled upon this role here at Novilend as a director of business development. And a lot of it really just has to do with creating processes, right? And making sure that anything that we're building here is something that is scalable and that we are going to be able to target for growth. So I'm a graduate from West Virginia University, and right now I reside here in Atlanta at one of our offices.
Okay, amazing. So one of the standard questions that we have for every single guest, and obviously we are going to dig deeper into your background, and we are going to be talking about how to explore supply chain internationally, how to acquire vendors, how to vet the vendors. That is the topic that we are going to be discussing today. But before we do that, we have a little bit of ritual here. So the question that we have for you is, what is your perspective on growth? What does business growth mean to you?
Yeah, growth is it's a very interesting topic, right? And it's something that has kind of evolved over the years. And everyone's looking for that unicorn idea, right? Whether that's with SaaS companies or for the products that just take off with, let's say, some form of viral marketing. But I think growth is something that I've had to learn very much, starting out with Novilend as being part of the founding five, I guess. And now we have over 30 employees globally. But when it comes to growth, it's really, I think it comes at a leadership level. And the only true way that you can grow any company, whether that is an Amazon business or it's to continue growing, let's say, a Fortune 500, it really has to come at leadership and making sure that any values that the leadership really has instilled in them, they're able to relate to the rest of their employees and their team members. Ultimately, if you have managers that really conflict with any growth strategies from, let's say, the C-level executives, that's where you will find your bottleneck. And that's something that, we've had to really incorporate from growing from just the first five people to 10 people to 20 people and on our way to 50 people. So it's really important that I think every step of the way you're able to instill those values at a management level and then trickle those down.
Yeah, completely agree. And this is a very interesting perspective that I have personally not heard before in terms of the internal communication and communicating your values. And that is definitely going to be a bottleneck to the growth. So for today's topic, we are going to talk about suppliers. So let's say if I'm the manufacturing executive and I have never done business internationally, Right. Maybe Mexico or maybe China, and I'm exploring this for the first time, what are 3 or 5 things that I should know about working with international suppliers?
Yeah, and I guess it's heavily dependent on where you're doing business. But number one is always understanding the culture. So for example, we work with our overseas offices in China, and the majority of our customers and users are based in the US, or they may be based in Australia or the UK. And they have significantly different cultures, whether that's personal or business with China. So a lot of times you may struggle with just understanding when someone says, for example, no in China, or they may, you know, just have a long maybe, which essentially just means a no. And it has to do with sort of a saving face culture.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. The number one thing is really understanding the culture. Two, it's understanding how they negotiate. I guess that sort of ties into the business culture. Right. Everyone is trying to get the best price, but it's all about how that's relayed. Right. A lot of times I tend to hear, I want the best product, best quality at the best price. I think that's every procurement agent or distribution agent's dream. It's really just getting the cheapest price for the best quality product. But you have to know how to relay that over to the manufacturers. Let's say, you know, if you're a U.S. business, relaying that to China and not just telling them I need very good quality product and I need it for 30 cents. It's very transactional. It's really telling them, hey, these are the key quality indicators that I'm looking for, and this is sort of what I would find acceptable. Are you able to fulfill this around this target price? And that's where I think you start to open a conversation rather than just telling them exactly how to do their job, almost, is how it may come across. So I guess just general culture and business culture, two of the most important things when handling international business, and being able to, once you have those two locked down, you're able to really start to establish those relationships, much less barriers.
Okay, very interesting. Another very interesting perspective. The culture is something that I have not heard a lot in terms of establishing these relationships. This is great. But let's say if I'm the manufacturing executive here in North America, right? And I have no contacts whatsoever in either China or Mexico. So how can I start on my journey in exploring the international supplier relationship?
Well, I guess the easiest answer to that question is to visit. It is to go to Mexico. It is to go to China. It is to go to India, wherever it is you plan to handle these relationships. And it's to see how they interact. So for example, prior to working here at Noviland, I did not fully understand the Chinese culture and the way that you actually manage relationships, and you manage them very effectively. And I'm talking about not just looking towards getting a cheaper price, but making sure that you have someone that's there in the good times and the bad times. And that's just as important as having them there in the good times. But it's actually going over there and taking them out and maybe having a nice dinner, having a good amount of drinks. And I'm talking about a good amount of drinks. Together and bonding over that. Yeah. And you'll see how they sort of interact with each other. You'll see how they interact with you. You'll open up more opportunities to be able to build together rather than, again, just being transactional, which a lot of times this has started to boil down to. It's very black or white. I need this. If you don't have this, I'm going to go somewhere else. Sometimes it takes a little bit of exploring. Just find out, you know, what makes them tick, and they'll find out what makes you tick. And once you're able to sort of drop some of those defenses down and be a little bit more vulnerable, I think that's where you can launch a very, very lucrative relationship and a long-term relationship, which I think, as everyone that's listening understands, it is so costly to switch vendors after you've gone through the vetting, after you've gone through the relationship building. And that will affect your bottom line, whether that has to do with quality, whether that has to do with price negotiations. Starting a great relationship and maintaining that is far more lucrative to everyone on both sides than it is to have to just find a new supplier and keep that transactional.
Okay, so before we go to the next question, obviously I need to understand your business a little bit better, who you help, who your customers are. what your business model is and the value that you are providing, so that we can position this conversation in the right direction. So do you want to touch on your business model, who you help, and what kind of value you provide to them?
Yeah, definitely. So we started about 5 years ago, and we started as a very traditional sourcing agency. We aim to work with other medium to large size businesses and help them source any products effectively from overseas. We didn't have the technology built that we have today. That was released back in 2018. So we'll sort of start the launch at 2018, I guess. And so when we launched that, we opened up this new opportunity to not just medium to large size businesses and enterprises, but also e-commerce sellers, which is one of the largest growing industries. And when we got our first few signups, we noticed that they were e-commerce sellers and they were struggling to find suppliers overseas. And a big reason for it was because they didn't understand the culture. And in one case, they may be using open marketplaces that are created today where any supplier can go sign up. And that also means that there's the good apples as well as the bad apples. So we really aim to simplify and mitigate the risks for businesses that want to handle overseas procurement and purchasing and do this all in one centralized tool to make it really easy for any company of any size to do this. And so this is why I focus so much on relationship building rather than just a transaction, because a lot of times you approach the marketplaces with a very consumer mindset where it has to be this price, has to be, you know, these specifications, not necessarily it has to maintain this quality level past these certain quality control measures. And I'd like to keep it around this price to keep good margins and everyone stays happy. So when we first started, we just had one dedicated person to each account, and we realized that that model just simply doesn't work. It's something that has been traditionally done across the board, and companies worldwide have agents that do that specifically for them. The issue is that's not scalable. And so when I'm talking about something that's scalable and is able to fill that role of, let's say, a sourcing agent, it's really having a team that's dedicated to working with our clients to maintain and create every project as a successful one. So instead of having one agent, we break apart all of the different positions. So you have the product specialists, factory specialists, they interact with the clients and the factories because they understand both cultures. They're able to negotiate those successfully. You have an order manager that, of course, oversees the logistics, handles export and import documentation, customs clearance, all the boring stuff that no one really worries about after you've already purchased the product. Quality control inspector, they, of course, work with our customers to make sure that we meet all the quality requirements. And then an account manager. And this is, I think, one of the most important roles, actually, because they are the ones that make sure that all the projects are streamlined and that all of our customers and users are happy. And so we had to break apart this business model simply because that single person that's managing all of those different roles and wearing all of those different hats just doesn't work. So we have a great back end and front end of our platform that helps streamline and really helps us, team work together. And that way everyone can stay on the same page at all times during every project.
Okay. So in terms of the market positioning, how do you like to position yourself? Are you going to be more of the Ariba or Coupa of the world in terms of marketplace? So in my mind, what Ariba and Coupa are going to do is, number one, they are going to help in finding the new suppliers. Let's say if I need help in a specific part category or the product category, I can go to Ariba and I can find new suppliers who might be supplying those, or I can interact with the existing supplier. And my compromise, if I need to work with Coupa or Ariba, is going to be I need to pay per transaction. Is that how you guys work as well? Is that your position in the market or different?
It's a bit different. It's a bit unique. It's very much a white glove service for international purchasing and logistics. And we've gone more downstream into warehousing and fulfillment, which actually is something that I think is top of every CFO's mind that's handling any type of product since coronavirus. I think third-party logistics centers are something that we're going to see increase in the next 5 to 10 years dramatically. But so we work with a lot of our clients one-on-one. First of all, they know who it is they're working with. They know that they're working with an entire team. And we essentially are their supplier for all of the products. So in our contracts, it's even written out that we are the ones that handle any returns or repairs or replacements for any defects or nonconformities, which of course affects the bottom line. Anything that you have to do yourself, whether that is assigning a purchasing manager or a procurement officer to start working with all the different vendors and noticing that some of them are dropping off in quality. quality and that you have to reach out to them. And then there's the barrier of the time difference, right? So rather than having to reach out to them at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. and worrying about when is that next shipment going to arrive. And of course, you're getting those reports from your warehousing team, and you start to see this trickle-down effect of accessorial charges actually starting to be charged. And you start realizing, hey, all these last-minute charges are really adding up. And this is affecting our bottom line at the end of the day. This is eating into our margins, eating into our profits. So we handle everything very proactively as a team. And this is why it's more of a white glove service, where we can actually monitor, the order managers can monitor all the logistics and shipping, coordinate between both parties, the warehousing managers that are receiving and the ports and the exports, let's say on the China side. You have the product specialists that are making sure that when a supplier is actually telling one of our clients anything, that they're being honest about it and they're being upfront about any potential issues that might happen down the road. So a lot of times, particularly, you know, a procurement officer may report back to the executive level and just say, yes, you know, the factory or the manufacturer mentioned they could make these changes. But one question that I always see left unanswered is, well, how much is that going to be? Right. It's not just yes, but it's okay. Yes, but how much? And let's say the negotiations go wrong or they go right, I guess, for the face value. And you want to get a 5% reduction. And a factory just, they turn around, they say, yes, we'll give you the 5% reduction. What they're not telling you is that 5% is coming from somewhere. It doesn't magically go away from there. They're not usually working with large enough margins to even give you that 5 or 10% discount. So they may be cutting corners. They may be using a cheaper material from a different source. They may be not assigning some of their engineers for quality assurance throughout manufacturing. There's so many different ways that they can actually cut out this 5%. So it's our job to actually make sure, hey, is this factory just saying that they could do 5%? Or why are they saying that they could go down by 5%? Those are questions that my team really make sure are answered ahead of time. And I think it's top of mind for every C-level exec out there. It's understanding the nitty-gritty of it, not just taking it at face value.
Okay, interesting. So I'm still not sure if I understand the order of engagement completely. So let's say if I'm the manufacturing executive and I have some problems in sourcing the suppliers internationally, so what are going to be order of operations here? So am I coming to you that I need to source these part number one, part number two, part number three, part number four, part number five? Or am I going to be provided a portal where I can search if you already have that? Or am I sending you the list? So tell me how the engagement works from the customer perspective. And what are different industries that are going to be right fit for you?
Yeah, we could just use this as a quick example. We have a manufacturer here in the U.S., down in Florida, actually, and they manufacture a lot of products for the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
And whenever they're looking for a new part or piece, of course, the purchasing manager there gathers all the specifications from their team and their engineering team. They put together a packet, right? The tech pack that usually has all the specs and the materials that need to be used, dimensions, any certifications that are required, a bit of a project scope. They understand the budget. They know around how much they want to purchase that item for. Of course, they know how many they need for the project and the duration of the project. Let's say 1,000 a year for the next 5 years. They'll take all of these requirements. They'll upload it into the portal. So they just go to novilan.com and then they upload it as a new RFQ or new request for a quote. From there, a product specialist team review it. They make sure that we have all the specifications that factories and in our network would need in order to quote it effectively. So they are experts on that front. So if you leave out a type of material or potentially, you know, a thickness or a length, they'll call that out and they'll let you know. Our biggest goal here is to make sure that everyone is prepared. So setting you up for success when you're sourcing. And when you approach a factory with every single question answered of theirs, and they can quote that immediately, you leave little to no room for error because you gave them everything up front. And so this manufacturer in Florida that got us all these requirements, we get them back a quote. Everything is done right in the portal. They can see the quote. They can add the product to a cart, very similar to shopping on Amazon, for example.
Yeah.
And immediately they'll see two things. They'll see the import duties and they'll see the shipping costs that are associated with it. So that's right there. They can take that back to their team and immediately say, hey, we don't have to worry about the customs. We don't have to worry about finding a freight forwarder that can transport these hazardous goods. Let's just take, for example, because you know, dangerous goods were very popular in 2020 because of hand sanitizer. So from there, their team is able to quickly make a decision. They don't have to sit back and try to figure out all these moving pieces. They immediately know, okay, yes, that's within our budget. That is the target price that we're looking for. It meets all the specifications, has the proper certifications. They can order samples in the portal. They can place the order in the portal. And of course, if it comes down to payment terms, it just varies. And that all varies on relationships. Most companies start out with 30% upfront, 70% prior to shipping, but after they receive the quality control report. But it just all depends on who you are, what background you have, what's the reliability behind it.
Yeah, so I still need a little bit more details here, because when we talk about, you know, going from, let's say, aerospace manufacturer to e-commerce shops, and the number of SKUs that you might need to maintain and the number of vendors that you may be sourcing from, it could be enormous. So I don't know if you have database of every single vendor out there and the SKU out there. So I'm still not sure what is your order of operations in terms of whether you source the vendors first and list all of their SKUs, or are you going to first take the RFQ and going to look at them and see if we have supported those SKUs in the past and if we need to do any sort of sourcing for additional parts that they might need. So tell me where the relationship starts in your business. Is it from the vendor's perspective or is it from the customer perspective?
Yeah, so it would be the latter in the first instance. So we do have a network of over 4,000 factories. We understand their machinery, their background, the products that they've created in the past, customers that they have, certifications that they hold. So we understand the full background of all these different factories in our network. And it really spans all the way from, and I kid you not, fully automated garage systems. We're actually helping provide one in the state of Georgia, one of the first ones in the state of Georgia, fully automated parking garage system, all the way to building materials for construction companies, to parts and pieces that need to be ordered at scale or at larger volumes by manufacturers in the U.S., e-commerce sellers that are looking for consumer packaged goods with minor customizations. They may require some molding or tooling. So it's not necessarily a certain niche that we take on and we say we can't service anyone else. Now, we don't do things like we discovered very early on that we weren't able to supply drones, because actually the Department of Defense here in the U.S. has a very tight regulation on drone imports from China. So that's something that we just don't touch. We don't touch anything with, you can't source Nike brand products from China and just order them overseas. We don't touch any counterfeits or anything of that nature. Anything that's custom or needs an OEM factory and needs to be purchased at scale is something that we are able to service. And so whether that means those are parts and pieces for car manufacturing, or if those are pots and pans that you need to order for your Amazon business, you just submit the RFQ into the portal. And within just a few days, we're able to tell you, yes, we have factories in our network that are able to service you. No, we don't have factories in our network currently, but we're in the process of vetting a few, or we could go vet a few. Or third, it's just, hey, this is not something that's within our wheelhouse, but we can try to refer you to somewhere else. It has to be very limited in scope, but also open enough to where we could take on any of the RFQs. We can't necessarily service all of them. We have to be honest about that.
Okay, so in terms of your marketplace, you are obviously networking with these 4,000 factories. There's no question about that. But you did mention that they don't have to worry about the freight duties. They don't have to worry about the quality control. So are you networking with these vendors as well, where you are doing the rate shopping? Are you working with the third party? How are you finding these rates? Is this your internal capability, external capability?
Yeah. And so this is actually very much part of our operational business development team. So when it comes to shipping and logistics, we have multiple partners. I'm talking about over a dozen partners that our operations team overseas has developed these great relationships with. And our tech team has been able to create algorithms that can assign based on the lane that they're being transported in. So whether it's going to the East Coast, to the West Coast, what type of warehouse? Is it an Amazon warehouse? Does it have to have Amazon labels, or is it going to a residential address? Our system automatically detects based on where it's going, which shipping carrier in our network would be best suited for it, and the quotes that are updated. I believe they're updated weekly or biweekly. I would have to double check with my team, but that's all done in the system that has a very big tech hand behind it, where the algorithms help determine which partners we're going to be using for shipping and logistics. When it comes to QC, it's something that we do handle in-house. So we do have a quality control inspection team. I believe it's called the ANSI ASQ Z.1 level 2 sampling plan. I want to say it's a long name, but it's a fairly international standard. It's something that we require that each of the orders that are going out or that have been manufactured are able to go through that process and are accepted, I guess, in QC terms. And we have to do this for every order, mainly because, one, we're the supplier. So anything that happens down the road is going to fall on us. Two, it's something that we want to make sure that every business is set up for success, no matter what the product is. So again, if that's a part or piece for a manufacturer, if that's a consumer packaged good that you're selling and you're relying on good reviews on, for example, you're relying that they're going to sell out quickly so you can increase that sales velocity. That all impacts the bottom line for any company. Again, parts or pieces, or you're selling the goods for retail. So making sure that they're great at the source, mainly because the way that pricing model works is that we're completely free to use on the platform. Anytime that you're checking out, that product FOB pricing already includes a small Novyland service fee in it. And so of course, if we quote it, you order it one time, it's we make some money on that order, but one of our goals is really to help you scale that up. So if you're starting off with, let's say, 1,000 pieces, how can we help you scale up to 2,000 or 5,000 pieces? If that means we have to work with our manufacturers to get you better long-term pricing strategies and models, then that's something that we'll have to do. If that means we have to figure out how we can optimize the container to fit more items in there so you save money, then that's something we have to do. At the end of the day, it's making sure that the businesses that we work with are continuously growing, and that we can be that helping hand or that overseas helping hand for them.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about the DQC aspect. So you did mention that you do a lot of QC, but when I look at QC, for each industry, the QC requirements are going to be different. In fact, they might require the certificate of conformance, or maybe if they are in the electronics industry, they might require, let's say, the certification of ROHS, because these manufacturers or the distributors might not want to take responsibility of doing the QC. They are relying on their suppliers. So this could be a massive undertaking. And then I don't know how your warehouse facility is. I mean, do you have like the separate warehouse for every industry that you are serving in to make sure that you are not going to be mixing the quality practices for these different micro industry? So tell me a little bit more about the QC processes for different industries that you are serving.
Yeah, that's a great question. So based on the current QC that we perform, it's more of the higher level QC. It's not materials testing or ingredient testing. Anything that requires a lab, we will outsource. And, you know, we can utilize companies like SGS, for example, just to make sure that we have all the proper certifications, whether that's per order basis or whether that's just the factory needs help getting a GMP certification in order to work with any level Fortune 500 level company here. We may work with that factory to actually help them gather all the documents that they need and get those in order. And we're no stranger to that. We've actually had to help a few factories move from China to Vietnam back in last year, a little bit over a year ago, once the U.S. imposed, I believe it was a 260 or 270% anti-dumping and countervailing tariff on Chinese cabinet imports. So we had to help them transition into Vietnam, make sure that they had an ethical and legal upstream and downstream supply chain, and ensure that they would be fully compliant. And so that's something that we're no stranger to. We fully understand all the compliance measures that every company has. The best part about it is every company tends to understand the compliance measures that they need. And so as long as they tell us these ahead of time, we're able to find the right factory for them, and we're able to coordinate with the right labs for the testing of QC, for example. Basic things like obtaining SDSs or MSDS reports, that's something simple, something basic. Yep. But to your point, I guess anything that's a little bit more than just the surface value of QC, we will outsource to a third party like SGS.
Okay. And in terms of the ownership, so typically, do you ship these products in your warehouse and then you ship it out to your customers, or is vendor directly shipping from their warehouse to customer's warehouse? Tell me a little bit more from the warehousing perspective, how you are managing the fulfillment of the orders that you are taking from your customer.
Yeah, I think it very much varies industry to industry. So let's just take, for example, a construction company, because we do work with a lot of general contractors that ask their subcontractors to work with us. That is very much a per project basis. So let's say that we are fulfilling two containers of doors, one container of cabinetry, half a container of countertops, and we understand the delivery schedule. In those instances, if we could get those products manufactured in time, and let's just take, for example, the project is here in Atlanta, where I am. We'll utilize one of our Atlanta warehouses, get everything shipped in early, and then just ship everything FTL to the project site, likely on a flatbed truck, make sure that it could go onto any of the lifts that they have at the project site to get it to the right level. And then we'll work with our customers to make sure that everything is quoted out appropriately so that the containers are maximized or optimized for the space usage that the trailers that are delivering it are able to either unload them or load them onto a lift if they need to, making sure that the manufacturers that are producing the item are protecting the items for ocean transport, as well as the handling at our warehouse and to the project site. And so that's just for construction. If it's for e-commerce or any online brands or even retailers, it's a lot simpler, actually. So you have the products, you make sure that they pass the quality control report, get that over to the customer or the user. And from there, that goes through our Novieland Logistics Center in China, goes through our secondary inspection, make sure that everything is packaged appropriately, that it is going to withstand any of the ocean transport and handling by customs, make sure that it has all the labels on it, whether that's going, again, to an FBA fulfillment center or to, let's say, one of the warehouses that we have or to one of our customers' warehouses. And so from there, we handle all the export, get everything transported to, let's just say, the U.S., and then it can either be shipped directly to a warehouse for e-commerce fulfillment, could be shipped directly to one of our customers' warehouses, which we're no stranger to. We do that very often for one of our customers out in California. If it's coming to the East Coast, one of the benefits of our shipping is that we will find the most cost-effective or I guess, preferred method for many of our customers. So whether that's time or whether that's cost. If it's cost, it may be going to the West Coast and then hopped on a rail, sent over, and then we handle the last mile delivery to that warehouse that they're being delivered to. If it's time, then we might find a fast ship boat or a expedited shipping boat, and instead of using a 40-foot container, which you know there's a lack of them nowadays, maybe use a 20-foot container, use two of them. So we find all these different options, and when it comes to logistics, it just varies industry to industry, really. I guess to answer that question in a very short form, it's whatever is most beneficial to our customers. It could be express air, could be ocean freight, and it's whatever's best suited for that project. So again, if it has to go through one of our logistics centers, it can hit our China logistics center, our US-based fulfillment and 3PL, and then ship to the customer. It could go directly to the customer, whatever's in their best interest.
Okay, this has been an insightful conversation. Do you have any last minute closing thoughts by any chance?
I think nowadays, the biggest thing that I've been noticing, and that when we audit our factories, one of the biggest complaints that they have, just in passing, sort of, is that the industry has really moved to more of a transactional form of communication. And it's something that will find its tipping point or its inflection point. And that's where I think a lot of companies will start to suffer. I think we need to pay back more attention and put more emphasis on relationship building, on making sure that your vendors are just as happy as you are, and making sure that they're working with you through the bad times and the good. So I think in closing, really just re-emphasizing and refocusing your values to make sure that it's relationship building rather than transactional.
Okay, amazing. And my personal takeaway from this conversation is going to be your vendor relationships are equally important as your customers, so care for your vendors.
Correct. Yes, I 100% agree.
All right, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your insight.
Thank you, Sam.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Francois or Novieland, head over to novieland.com. It's NOVILAND.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with Harry Moser from Reshoring Initiative, who discusses how to compute the total cost of ownership of reshoring initiatives. Also, the interview with Sarah Barnes-Humphrey from SHIBS, who shares her knowledge of international supply chain and trading. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I will try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to catch you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.